back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Lots of fun around the word wouldn't today. Wouldn't. The word of the day, obviously, the big screw-up. Or, you know, I'm not saying it was a screw-up. He meant to say what he said. I truly believe that. This is the spin. This is the oops, I stepped in it. I better come up with the most sophomoric possible excuse to why you should forgive me. And I think he found it in the wouldn't. But here to share some thoughts on what happened in Helsinki, we've got Luke Vargas, chief foreign correspondent there with Talk Media News in Helsinki. Luke, thanks for taking time for us.
You're very welcome. Glad to be with you.
So what was the scene like? I mean, I saw some of the pictures that you put out from the press conference. What was the feel in the room?
I have to say, this is a question I've gotten a lot today, and I feel like my answers are pretty disappointing. And that's because the U.S. press corps has been through a lot trying to make sense of everything we've seen in the Trump administration, to the point where I'm proud to say we haven't become inoculated to it. That, as I think we saw with those two dogged Reuters and Associated Press reporters who elbowed their way to get more questions into what was supposed to be a limited press briefing and made sure to guarantee that questions directed at Putin actually got to Putin, as much as President Trump tried to shield the Russian president from harsh inquiry. That said, I still think many of us are just so used to the president's rhetoric. We could have seen from a mile off exactly what he was going to say in Helsinki. I don't think anything he really said was a surprise.
No.
I don't think we needed any more evidence that he didn't believe in the American intelligence assessment. Down the line, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there were maybe a few moments where there were a few groans, and if you listened closely enough, maybe, you know, a little frustrated tapping of the feet when President Trump took things back to Hillary Clinton and Pakistanis and email servers and things like that. But, I mean, this has been par for the course. I don't think very little of what we saw yesterday in Helsinki was new from President Trump.
So are you surprised by the blowback then? I mean, because I'm with you. I saw the clip and I'm going, yeah, I'm not surprised. But yet you see all the Republicans coming out and saying that there was meddling going on. You got Newt Gingrich saying this is the biggest screw up of his tenure. You've got, you know, Fox News calling his a disgrace. Are you surprised by the blowback back here?
I'm not surprised. I feel like it should have occurred at some earlier date. And so in that respect, I think it's long overdue. I still continue to be surprised and dismayed, I suppose, that even the Republicans that are being most vocal in condemning President Trump aren't even using his name. That just seems like a healthy ecosystem. And I would hope it goes the other way, that when a future Democratic president does something truly boneheaded, the Democrats don't just issue such weak, seemingly sort of untethered to the moment press releases that you could kind of pretend it was about someone else. So I suppose, but I will say this, I did expect President Trump to make some statement to the media today. What he did say today was not what I expected. We can talk about what he did say in a second. I expected what he was going to say was, the people who are criticizing me are the people who criticize me about everything. It's liberals who can't stomach the notion that I might secure a major foreign policy victory. I guess I'm glad he didn't say that, but I'm sure he will in time. Nothing about what he said in a seeming hostage statement today, reading off a sheet of paper, looks like it's really what he believes. So I'm sure he'll revert back to candidly, pillorying everyone. That said, I expected he was going to say, look, these liberals can criticize me on everything, which I was ready to push back against in advance, because I do think the liberal outrage over what happened here in Helsinki, it was predictable. And frankly, I'm getting a little tired of that as well. And I don't, you know, if I were Gene Shaheen's communications manager, in fact, I know who that person is, I guess I wouldn't decide against issuing a press release saying that what happened in Helsinki was problematic. I think you're kind of duty bound maybe to do that. But that said, I think it just, and I did maybe what, 2-3 dozen talk shows today where I've talked to people in New Hampshire and Vermont and things, and what these hosts, the right wing hosts, tried to do was just say, look, Jean Shaheen and I don't know, these other people have been, you know, moaning about President Trump for ages, and here are their statements. He could have gone and secured world peace in Helsinki, and they still would have issued this. That's a huge distraction, right? What we actually should be, we should take the Democrats out of consideration and ignore their press releases. Look at how Republicans are shifting. The ground is moving ever so slightly, right? You have Republicans still stopping short of condemning President Trump by name, but they are doing so in increasingly pointed language. And I think there's been a small increase in the number of them who are making statements critical of President Trump's foreign policy. And at the very least, and who knows, it's a CNN Booker or a Fox News Booker that could actually give us the data here, were they so inclined. I bet there's an increasing number of Republicans who are declining to go and do instant analysis spin on the president's behalf after every foreign misadventure. Those are the indicators we need to be looking at.
No, you're right, which is why yesterday, when we started off the show yesterday, I read like 20 responses from Republicans. I didn't look at any of the, much to your point, I didn't look at anything from Schumer or Pelosi or any Democrats. I simply looked at, you know, let's go through what the Republicans are saying, because they're the ones who are going to decide what happens. These are the people who are going to step up and save the country or continue down this path of destroying our alliances with our allies and, you know, marrying up to someone like Putin. And I'm not comfortable with that. As, you know, a kid who grew up in the 80s, you know, I still have this, you know, what's the right word? Not disdain, but this distrust of the Russian government.
Yeah, I guess that takes me to another point, something that, and I have to say, I attended the press conference yesterday, and I have never been more glad to have the job that I have with Talk Media News, which is to say that my duties on the day of the event were to file audio, breaking news audio clips as the event occurred, to do several minute-long news pieces narrated about major developments. But then it was to, you know, I got a full night's sleep, and I've woken up on a new day, I read the local papers, I talked to maybe 5 or 6 sources, people here in the government, Russian experts in Moscow, and people back home, and tried to get a little bit of analysis from people I trust, who are not overly, you know, partisan, though there are some partisans mixed in there, and then try to have a thoughtful debate about what happened. And, you know, walking out of that press conference, well, actually during it, you know, so President Trump and Putin leave the stage, and within a second, 5 network news anchors need to hop up on chairs, and they spin around, and they face the back of the room, and they need to provide instant analysis on what just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still struggling to do that, and we're, what, 20 hours out from this thing ending, or maybe more, 32 hours or something like that. And you know, I don't – it's a weird environment. I think – you start talking about being, you know, growing up in a different period and thinking you're almost latching on to what I'm drawn to right now on more considerate analysis, which is let's actually not focus on just what was said at the press conference in Helsinki. But I've been here for a week. I've been to the Baltic states. I've embedded with NATO troops. I've talked to former presidents of this region, Soviet dissidents, Russian government officials. You know, I've tried to really sound out everyone's position here. And I think we need to be maybe spending a little bit less time talking about the daily development in the Russia probe and talking and trying to reach out to people in this country by talking about the major tectonic shifts that are occurring in American foreign policy. Namely, that I think what we've had ample evidence of over the last week is that the U.S. and Russia are beginning to align in the fact that they have this strategy of trying to divide and conquer European countries. The U.S. for so many decades, and I'm proud to align with this former notion of what we used to do, which was, you know, we realized we were in a battle of ideology. And we said, all right, well, let's create some institutions, NATO, for instance, in which we find people who are willing to go along with the lowercase L liberal Western democratic model, and we'll pull them into a security alliance. And, yeah, we're going to pay more than everyone else to make sure, but we're going to get the political buy-in of a bunch of other countries, and but in so doing, we'll guard our ideology in a fraught time. We did that on trade, and you and I have disagree on a lot of elements of trade, I think, just sort of reading between the lines. But I also think driving at its heart, and maybe not in its implementation, on multilateral trade deals through the years has been a notion that, you know, money is going to be made in this world, and we have to realize, you know, the major hegemons in the world will try and shape trade rules to their liking. And the U.S. Has tried to create an alternate set of trade rules with countries that align with our interests, and then other countries set their own trade groupings. And Trump has retreated from this. He sees the fact that the European Union countries have gotten together and then want to negotiate as a group with the U.S. as something that is only going to screw over the U.S., right? Because we could wring out a few more pennies from them if we dealt with them one-on-one and could get them to submit and, you know, accept more U.S. demand in a bilateral relationship. And he sees that with NATO as well, which is really what my observations in the Baltic have made me concerned about. He really does think if Portugal isn't going to pony up 100% of what they ought to be giving, then we should carve out an exception and not protect Portugal. And this is the Russian mindset in Europe. It really is. And everyone I've talked to has made this clear that, you know, when we talk about pipelines, Russia wanting to build as many little pipelines to as many countries in Europe as possible, it's a way of doing the same thing, saying, you know, we can extract more demands and influence to a greater degree the politics of individual countries, let's say Estonia, if we have a direct pipeline of, heating energy, heating gas, natural gas to Estonia, and if they run afoul of us, we'll cut them off and their citizens will freeze in the winter. And so as opposed to a pipeline that snakes through every country where there are too many complications to actually close the taps. And I find whether or not Trump really knows this is what he's doing, I don't think Putin and Trump are converging on this central ideological premise for the same reasons, but it is occurring. And it's the kind of thing that you need to step back. But once you step back, I think you can see it forming. And it does make me quite nervous.
It makes me nervous as well. And I'm with you. You know, our differences on trade, I'm in favor of, you know, trading with countries like us on even playing fields. I don't know how you have free and open trade with a country like China, sure, who has, you know, and this is where the only thing I agree with Trump on, the squirrel has found the nut in this, yep, in this world, is that, you know, they're eating our lunch. And not just that. Yep. They're buying us, and it's massively unfair trade. And I hate to give him a win on that, but it's always been my mantra. I don't think we should be going after beating up on Canada or beating up on the UK or Germany. But, you know, China's the gorilla in the room. Nobody thought we would be going and attacking Germany and the UK. But that's where he's taken this. And my fear is that he steps into this and he screws it up to where we never address our problems with China and it only gets worse. But that's another conversation for another day. But you talked about the Baltic states, and do they see this? Are they kind of freaking out? Because, you know, there was that comment that, you know, maybe the U.S. would stop some joint military operations, you know, in that region, which I would assume is kind of what Putin would really want if he was going to get the old band back together.
I think the Baltic states were probably spared the most humiliating concession that Trump could have coughed up that really would have put them in a jam. But that said, they remain the most vulnerable to long-term pivots in Trump's foreign policy thinking, in my view, that these are countries that have successfully appealed for support from NATO in the past 3 or 4 years, gotten NATO to not only put a cyber command or a cyber center of excellence, as it's formerly called, in Estonia, which is basically something like a think tank, but that undermines it. It's a place where Estonia had its networks targeted by Russia several years ago in an all-out attack, and they said, screw it, NATO, you've got to take cyber seriously, so put a huge center in our country, and we're going to teach European countries how to protect themselves against outside interference. Good on them. That's where the alliance, leaning on the alliance, worked. And on military, after the invasion and annexation of Crimea, these same Baltic countries appeal to NATO and particularly to the United States. They help give us some extra support here in these four countries, and the support comes. And so, insofar as President Trump, quite unlike what he did in Singapore, where he readily conceded a major point to Kim Jong-un by agreeing to suspend the joint drills with South Korea, we didn't see Trump actually initiate a cut in NATO spending just yet, though he's certainly threatening it, I think, and is sincere in wanting to follow through with those threats. session on, let's say, blocking further expansion of NATO to include countries that Russia doesn't want to see join the alliance. And yet, you read between the lines, and it's a central challenge for journalists to try and guess what was talked about behind closed doors, right? We don't know what exactly Trump and Putin talked about for 2 hours and 15 minutes or whatever it was. But there was one little bit, a little clue I detected from Putin in which, you know, after Trump basically takes a 1,000 bullets for Putin, Putin does punch back at the U.S. twice. He criticizes us for withdrawing from the JCPOA, the Iranian nuclear deal. I think a relatively valid criticism, perhaps, at least in the tone that Putin phrased it. But then says, in the context of sort of nuclear security, well, you know, the U.S. has put these anti-missile systems in Eastern Europe, and we don't like this. You know, this to me is a possible window into what Putin might be pushing Trump on behind the scenes.
You know what the end game is.
That might be the concession he wants Trump to give in exchange for some sort of peachy relationship with the Russians, where we can ostensibly unlock some sort of otherwise impossible counterterrorism cooperation or, you know, agreements on nuclear, which I totally reject as a premise that those are issues that you need to, you know, make major political concessions in order to unlock. But yeah, I think the Baltic probably escapes without a huge black eye from this, but they will not be able to rest all that secure, because I think come the end of the year, when Trump realizes that he challenged all these NATO countries to, like, titanic increases in their respective military spending within several months, which is probably impossible in most of these countries, and they're not going to do that, and thus he's going to be left to enforce his threat, which is perhaps for the U.S. to go its own way instead of sticking with the NATO alliance. I think the Baltic would be one of the areas most at risk should Trump see through that threat.
A scary future ahead, as I see it, and nothing good came out of this. Luke, I'd love to talk about this all day long, and we're going to have to get back to this because this is really, to me, this is central to what this administration is doing. Good luck over there. I appreciate you taking some time and sharing your thoughts. You know, good on you, man.
Well, hey, it was my pleasure. You know, I'm gonna keep doing this, and I will try to make sense of everything that comes in the months and years ahead.
And we need more thoughtful voices on this. Thanks so much, Luke.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Luke Vargas, Talk Media News. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.